The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and welcome back. It's Friday night. That means tomorrow, Saturday, and weekend, another one. Zoom, we go through the month of September, October, Halloween, and we roll into the holiday festivities. Okay, we have a special guest these first 2 hours tonight. Well, actually, we have three, but one new one to the program. We're going to talk to somebody who is an airline pilot, and who has had some extraordinary experiences I am really looking forward to hear about. First up, let's say hello to George Filer, Major Filer, of course, the editor-in-chief and creator of Filer's Files, the best weekly UFO, ET, and historic newsletter on the internet. You can get a free subscription. We'll tell you how to do that a little bit later. It's wonderful. Hello, George. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm all excited. Got another pilot talking about seeing UFOs.
Yeah, this is
it. I was the only one.
No, you were the first. This one is, I don't know the gentleman, but it's his first time, I believe, coming forward with this information. And I want to thank Frank Chile, who is with us as well, for arranging this. Hello, Frank. Welcome back, and thank you.
Good evening, Jeff. You're welcome. It's a wonderful night for disclosure.
It's a great night for disclosure. That's a kind of sounds like a new Broadway, well, off-Broadway musical. A wonderful night for
Jeff,
disclosure. What?
So many folks are getting the inward prompting to come forward and share their experiences, and it's like they're going to start lining up to be able to start sharing these things.
Well, we're ready, and with your help and George's help, we'll keep bringing it out. I think you may be on to something with that statement. I hope so. So sad to see the last generation take so much valuable information with them when they left this planet, and it's just not something I think serves the better and general interests of all humanity. We have a birthright to this information. We really do. It's a God-given right to know what our status is, not only in our solar system, but in our galaxy and in the universe. And these people that you're bringing on and George is working with all the time, in many cases, are putting information on the table that we really deserve to have, and I'm eminently grateful to our guest tonight. Frank, you want to go ahead and introduce him?
Sure. I'm pleased to introduce a fellow that I met through a mutual friend who said, Frank, you need to get a chance to meet Brett D. He's an incredible individual who's had probably 35 years of experiences with UFOs and with the craft and new visitors. And I was able to connect with Brett recently, and I welcome him onto your program and for him to share his story this morning for the first time with the public.
Very good. Hi, Brett. Welcome aboard. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here, too. And Frank, I just, it was interesting because he kind of caught me off guard with this offer to, you know, to do this radio show. And only having a day or two to think about it, I figured, well, I mean, you can't really pass this up. So I thought I'll sign up for it. Had I been given more time, I probably would have backed out of it.
That's interesting. Well, Brett, let me ask you just a silly philosophical question. Why do you say that? Why do you think if you had had more time, what would have the deciding factor been that would have said to you, no, tell him no thanks? What would
well,
it have been?
I think it's always interesting to speak openly about this sort of thing. And although I do it with individuals, but to do it on a platform where thousands or even millions of people are hearing it, you know, sometimes it can cause you problems with your job, especially in the line of work that I'm in. And I do know an individual that had problems when he came forward, but it was about a decade ago.
Sure.
So it's probably, you know, it's all tied to fear. And I'm all about trying to, at this point, stand up and, you know, and overcome that little problem, too.
Well, so. I think what you're doing is more than salutary. It's brave, courageous, and I go along with Frank and George, and I think you too. I hope others will come forward. So you've never spoken about this on any media platform or just individually to people occasionally.
Yeah, I do make it a habit to, I sort of intuit my way through the situations with people, but I do speak to people about it if I intuit that they're going to be receptive to some extent to it. And I have spoken in public at a community college once many years ago to about 50 people or so on this subject. And that was that's pretty much it.
Right. Now, you've been a pilot for a long time. We don't need any real details on that, but how many years, how many hours?
Over 25,000 hours of flying time, and I've been flying since I was 20 years old, and I'm 56 now.
Well, you've had a great career. That's sounds like you've had as many scheduled landings as you've had takeoffs, so that's always good.
So good.
yeah. There are so many angles to this phenomenon, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you've been through. And I understand it's actually quite a lot over a long period of time. So why don't you just take it at the beginning, and we'll all walk through it.
Okay, great. Of course, the beginning's a little bit tricky, but where I count the beginning of you know, UFO experiences is when I was about 21 years old, and I had a small welding operation. I built gym equipment in my aunt's garage. They were kind enough to allow me to do that, and I had jigs and so forth, and I'd build these things out. And I was out welding in the carport. My mom was visiting, and she was in the backyard, and the house was open, and she started yelling for me to come to the backyard, you know, through the open house, and I could hear her, and I was in the middle of welding, and I was like, okay. Well, I ended up taking off the hood, dropping the rod, and
this
going
is,
into the backyard.
Daytime, nighttime.
This is daytime. This is before noon, and it was in May. Around 1980 or so.
Are you from New England by any chance?
No, I'm actually from Seattle.
Seattle, I have never heard a West Coaster pronounce it aunt before. That's something you hear back east a lot.
I probably have a mix of things going on with my...
Well, it's nice to hear. It's kind of... I like it. Okay.
Okay. Well, my mom was laying in the grass, and my aunt was tending to her garden and her flowers and things. It was a beautiful day in May, and there was
your mom was yelling at you, laying in the grass, laying on the lawn.
Yeah, she's laying in the grass, and she's calling me to come into the backyard. And she's a country girl. You know, she grew up on a farm, so you know, laying in the grass is not that's normal for her. And she was laying back, just taking some rays in, and she's looking up at the sky. And she's watching this craft move across the sky, and it caught her attention as being odd, so she called for me. And I got to the backyard, and she straightens out her arm and hands me her sunglasses and says, "Brett, look at this ghost ship up above us." Those were her words.
Ghost ship.
And
right.
Ghost ship, that's what she called it. And I looked up at this thing, and it was highly unusual. I instantaneously knew I was looking at something that I just intuitively knew that this was not something that we can do. And there was a sphere and a cone. And laying down, it looked like a single scoop ice cream cone moving across the sky, except that it was glowing, had its own light, and it didn't look like it was made of any kind of matter that I can even imagine.
Huh.
It was completely silent.
Was it close enough for you? Was it? Sorry, Brett. Was it close enough for you to see any detail, fine detail, or semi-fine detail?
Well, that's the interesting thing about it. It was emanating a glowing light of its, but not like light, not like a headlamp. The whole thing was glowing. Uniform.
Uh-huh.
It was uniform. I mean, there wasn't any outstanding features on this thing. Just a cone and a ball. And it was moving, in the direction of the point of the cone.
Okay, so the point of the cone was going first and the ice cream was trailing.
Exactly. And as it turns out, these two things were separated when they were moving across the sky, but by the time I got to the backyard and looked at it, they had actually come together into one unit. But my mom saw them separately, and one was gaining on the other, and the ball eventually caught up to the cone, and which is when I looked at it, and it was all one piece at that point. And there was a singular cumulus cloud above the backyard, and there wasn't any other cloud anywhere else in the sky from my vantage point.
Uh-huh.
And this cloud, this object went either into the cloud, and it was fairly low. I'd say the cloud was below 2,000 feet.
That's low for a cumulus cloud.
Well, not in May, though. Not in
okay.
May in Seattle, because the temperature dew point convergence, you know, is it's not going to put the cloud.
All right, well, you get a lot of moisture
May.
There, so I understand. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And so this thing punches into the cloud or goes behind it, and, you know, you're waiting for it to come out the other side, just like an airplane would, except that it never comes out the other side. And then the cloud starts to boil, like you might see on a time-lapse camera.
Whoa.
Yeah, and this was a dense little cumulus puff. You know, it wasn't like a rain cloud or anything yet, but I mean, this cloud wouldn't just dissipate like that, and it just started boiling. Literally in 3 minutes, the cloud and the object were completely gone.
Wow, it sounds like magic. I'll make a magic act.
It was pretty neat. I was very excited about it because, I thanked them for it. And it was like it was like my brother and I always knew, we just always knew. We always knew they were out there. And then this, I really felt like was the first where they popped up on top of, you know, me and said hello. And, it felt personal. And, so I kind of marked my UFO sighting from that event on.
That's really fun. That's a very nice story. And the idea that you said thank you, I mean, obviously you probably would have thanked your mom, but I think you were saying thank you to the ice cream cone.
Yeah, well, you know, I felt like they couldn't have moved that slow and been that obvious about what they're... I mean, it just seemed to me that it was quite choreographed.
I understand.
And, yeah.
Got you loud and clear on that. That's fascinating. What an amazing thing. I have heard one time in 23 years of doing this, of an ice cream cone shaped UFO, to my knowledge and recollection. Hi, George, have you ever heard of an ice cream cone shaped UFO?
I've heard of it, but they are very rare. Got to see something rare in the UFO field. I was wondering how large it appeared.
Size is it's tricky because you don't really have anything to compare it to. So
if you held your fist out and made a fist at arm's distance from your body, would your fist have covered the thing?
I would say yes, but I'd say not by much.
Okay. It was sizable then. All right.
Well, and it was fairly low.
Yeah. 2,000 feet.
I mean, the object, I think, was between 1,500 and 2,000 feet, is my guesstimate on it.
Well, they have rifles that shoot that far. That's easy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very interesting story. Was it a vanilla ice cream cone or a chocolate cone?
It was vanilla.
Uh-huh. Okay.
except that the crunchy part, that was vanilla too. It was all one.
I gotcha.
White,
yeah.
Like opaque sort of look to it, and it was very uniform looking and dead silent.
So you had the feeling though, at some level, that that was obviously an intelligently guided object, that whatever it was wanted or didn't mind you seeing it.
That's the way I felt about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Frank, yeah. Anything you want to add to this?
Brett and Jeff and George, the only time I've ever seen a depiction of that style of craft has been in religious paintings where it showed in the sphere part, in the ball part, someone at the controls of a device, and the cone shape would be as they're moving through space.
That's
so
exactly that painting.
Like the cockpit, so to speak.
Yes.
Around.
You see that in religious paintings?
I've seen it.
More than 1,000 years.
I've seen it. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I've seen that picture. Very interesting indeed. Yeah. Well, you're off and running at 21. And as you reflected on this, what did you think? I'm hearing in your voice that you might have felt that you had more yet to experience, that wasn't going to be a one-off deal later on.
That is true, and I can't really explain to you why, but my brother and I, when we were little, we used to look for them when we were out camping. And, you know, and my brother has experiences that date back with our family, and he remembers them. He was a little older, back to when I was about 2.5, and he was, you know, 5. And we were in Issaquah driving at nighttime, and an orange ball came down alongside the road and started getting pretty close to treetop level, and then it started converging on the road that my dad was driving on, and at some point, my brother detected fear in my father, and shortly after that, there's no memory of the event. It's possible that these things
time?
Not sure, mm-hmm. because he was little, and I was very little, and I vaguely remember what he was talking about. I remember being on the back seat and looking up on the seat. There weren't seat belts back in those days.
Yeah,
and
somehow people survived.
I know. Well, the cars were made a lot heavier, that's for sure. But
great story. 2.5 years of age, and your brother 5, and dad. You detected fear in Dad. Was his hair standing straight up? How did you? Or was he?
That's something. I think in his voice, with the way he was looking at this thing, and and you know, and it was, you know, these objects. When you see something like that, it's unusual. It's not. Your gut knows that it's...
They're life-changing events, for goodness sakes.
They certainly are opportunities for it. You know, if we don't file them away and disregard them, they're definitely opportunities to shift paradigms, and that's kind of where my brother and I have taken it.
What did your mom and you talk about regarding the ice cream cone? Anything?
Oh yeah, we were very excited. I mean, we talked about it. My aunt had seen some UFOs before, so this was not the first one that she'd seen, but it was probably the closest one that she'd ever seen. Uh-huh. And my mom was more quiet about it, but she would talk about it. But as the years went on, it was interesting, but her memory faded of that event at times to the point where she would say, "Oh, honey, I don't know," you know,
yeah,
sort of thing.
I understand. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. Sounds like you had a nice family.
That,
go ahead, George.
There's a family aspect to this that... I mean, it's hard to tell for sure, but a good chance something happened with your father. There's missing time and so on. And they seem to follow families.
We wonder if mom and dad had anything happen to them when they were little or during their lifetimes before you were born. And do you ever talk to her about that? Did she say anything to you?
There's never been any mention that I can recall. From my father or my mom in that regard. My grandmother, however, on my dad's side, had an amazing sighting out in Redmond, Washington, when we were, I was probably a young teenager. And she shared that with Mark and I only.
Mark being your brother?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
She was, my grandmother
break, Todd.
Was...
Go ahead.
Yeah, my grandmother was insomniac, so she hardly slept at all, and she had physical issues, but she was Rh negative. That ties into some of this stuff too sometimes. But anyway, she was Rh negative and psychic somewhat, and she was walking through the house in Redmond and had passed by one of the bedrooms and looked out the window. The curtains were drawn, but there was so much light coming through that window, and that was unusual because they were out there quite a ways, and there wasn't really any street lamps or anything out there where this window was. And so it caught her attention, and she walked, you know, into the room and opened the blinds, and she saw, she explained them as lanterns hanging in the sky.
Huh.
Different geometric shapes, colors, just hanging there. And I always, you know, visualized that experience, but it really, it affected her. And she did not wake up her husband, and he, as it turns out, was very angry with her about it because he's like, you know, how could you not wake me up to see this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I would like to be awakened, yeah, absolutely. But
oh, it's something that unusual, you know, you definitely want a shot at it.
Very
so,
good.
Yeah,
all
I
right.
guess it is somewhat of a family thing, perhaps, you know?
Yeah, well, Grandma... very odd. That's an unusual thing. It's not an ice cream cone. And what happened to her sighting objects? Did she tell you? They just go away, like go out?
She said they hung there for extended. They hung there so long she walked away from it.
Oh my! Yeah.
And I remember her telling me that she had come back and they were still there. And she just, I guess she just didn't know what else to do with it, so she just ignored it after that. But, you know, I'm guessing that it, you know, challenged your paradigms a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what's next in your life photo album here?
Well, you know, the UFO thing calmed down. I don't really, there wasn't much going on with after that event with my aunt and my mom for a while. Somewhere along the way, I started working in the mid-90s. I went through a divorce, and I started doing, trying to do some meditating. And that opened up a lot of experiences that somehow, interestingly, tie to this, to these sighting activities at times. So meditation started. I started getting downloads when I meditated. Meaning information would flow sometimes.
Sure.
That seemed fairly profound.
Mm-hmm.
So I would write it down.
Can you give us one example?
I'll give you the example that jump started me spiritually. And it was, I was on an overnight in Greensboro. I was going through a pretty rough time. Heartbroken, you know, marriage dissolved. Anyway.
No, not fun and thoroughly understood. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I had sat down in my room that night, and I had gone out for a few beers, come back, and I had laid out the things on my table because I was trying to do this meditation thing, and I was doing dowsing at the time too a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I had a tablet out there, I had a pencil, I had a pendulum, I'm not sure what else, and I had come back to my room, and I had made it a habit to not go to bed at nighttime until I tried to connect with the all that is, whatever, like that. So I, even though I had had a few beers, I was like, I shut the lights down, and I sat in a chair, and my meditations weren't really true meditations at the time. They really became more like prayer sessions, and I had been asking in prayer for a concept of God, because I didn't really feel like I had one, and I wasn't raised religiously or anything, but although there was religious people in my family scattered about, but you know, we were raised in a very open home as far as belief systems were concerned, so that was helpful. But anyway, I was connecting, and I was asking for guidance and really a concept, because I felt like it was so vast. It's like, you know, I need something here with some parameters to it. And
good question.
I was woken up in the middle of the night. It was like I was dreaming, and it was like a curtain. There was like a blade that came down where the middle of a curtain would be on a movie screen or a stage curtain, and it literally pushed my dream aside.
Huh.
And the dream disappeared, and a voice came to me, and it said, "The concept of everything that ever was, everything that ever is, and everything that ever will be is to begin to know that which is God."
Wow.
And I was like, whoa.
That's quite an answer.
That's what I thought, too. That event, and then there were some other messages I got that night, too, but they weren't as significant as that one, although there was one about time and one about manifesting. But the one, so anyway, I was...
I'm a nagger for details. Manifesting,
no.
What kinds of things? Manifesting
in your life, like bringing anything to your
uh-huh.
life. The voice... Yeah, I just said that. It said that to write it down is the first step to bringing it into material existence.
Really? Oh, very good.
To write it down. Go ahead.
A lot of people are listening all over the place, and that's probably a good exercise to do in any case when you're troubled by anything. Write it down. Externalize it. Put it on something you can look at. It makes it more palpable.
So.
And less intimidating. That's very good. Very good.
Yeah. The other message was about time, and it said, the voice said, all of time shifts as the moment point of time occurs. Didn't really know what to do with that one.
You remember these word for word.
Oh, yeah. They're burned into my psyche, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like what I'm hearing.
They were powerful. Yeah, they were powerful moments. And what happened after that was there was a shift for me. It galvanized my wanting to know answers and things. And I realized that I was very ignorant in regards to important things like love and God. And I didn't really, in truth, I was like, you know, I know how to fly an airplane, I can fix a car, I can do all kinds of things, and I can go out on a date, but I don't really know about these more important things, and I wanted to know. And I wanted to know why there's so much conflict in religion.
Yeah, Brett, let me ask you a question. It's a little off the subject, but not much.
Yeah.
What was your feeling about the old cliche that love, as we know it, true love, is the most powerful essence in the universe? How do you feel about that now?
I absolutely believe that, and I'll tell you why, if I may.
You may.
I used to have a courier job in Seattle. That took me all over Western Washington, and I was being trained on this job, and I was in Tacoma. It's for a bank as a courier, and I was in Tacoma early a.m. And there was a young man teaching me, and I was, you know, I was pretty young too. I was in my early 20s or so. And we were driving downtown. Now, downtown was completely like shut down in the early a.m. hour. You know, nobody's there. But there was a street person laying on the corner, he was all tattered, and he was laying there. And as we got closer to him, before we passed him, the young man I was working with spit out the window at him.
Not good.
As a gesture.
I got it.
Good. And while he was doing that, I had the most overwhelming wave of love and compassion cover me, and I can't even explain it. I've never had anything like it since. It completely overtook me at the same moment. And it took me years to even begin to understand what happened there. And I've never actually felt anything like it since.
It's quite a spiritual event, and
it was very moving, but it was so deep and it was so overwhelming. And I kind of like to come back to that, because I have some thoughts on that from experiences I've had now that might shed some light on why that's hidden in us.
We'll do that. Let's do that a little later. Very good. Okay. Frank and George, anything you want to add to this at this point?
Well,
George,
to me,
you're first.
Well, I
Frank's
think it's
first.
Important to have, God in your life.
Oh, absolutely.
But
something.
Everyone has to find his own, place in the world, so to speak. And it's always good to have somebody out there that you can pray to and love as well.
Yeah, indeed.
Frank?
It sounds like the lighted path was made known to Brett.
I'm sorry, say that again.
It sounds like the lighted path was made known to you, Brett.
Oh, yes.
He was on the right track, all right. Okay, Brett,
I was being shown some things, for sure.
Yeah, you were. Yep. Let's go on with your story, then. Okay.
So, let's see. Okay, so that kind of kicked off my, I went after knowledge with a veracity after that, and I was, I wanted to know about ancient history, I wanted to understand the religions more, so I started reading a lot of, I was drawn to the Indian, Eastern, but I looked at other things too, but the Eastern it was so detailed that it really made a lot of sense to me, but I wanted to know why there's so much conflict. If all these people actually knew God, then what are they arguing about? So I had these questions like this, and of course, it took me on this interesting path of looking at all kinds of things, physics, in layman's terms. I wanted answers, and it also took me to reading about Sumer, the pre-Egyptian, pre-Babylonian civilization that has largely been edited from our history.
Oh, yeah.
And that became, I didn't know it at the time, but it became really key to understanding so many other things later on, even with regard to some of the things going on here with the extraterrestrial activity. So it was key, but I didn't know it at the time. And so my path took me into wanting to go deeper also in the spiritual way, so I started asking for guidance with that. And I asked in meditation, I was like, don't send me to somebody that knows about you, send me to somebody that knows you, was my prayer. And I was led to Yogananda, and I started studying his work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through his work that I learned how to meditate deeply. So the deep meditation came from Yogananda's teachings, because it's a how-to thing. There's a science to it. So, and I learned that science. I took a 3-year course with that institute and learned how to go into deeper meditation.
Wow, you really got into it. Yeah.
Well, I did, because I'd been pointed a lot. I mean, I had angels save my life while I was driving. I fell asleep on the road once, and a subspace being picked me up, snapped me up in the chair, scolded me, and there you couldn't see anything. I mean, you know, I knew that there was more than meets the eye in this world.
Uh-huh.
I knew that even when I was young, but I still didn't know where to put that or how to tie that into my understanding of reality, but I simply was open. I was open.
Very good.
You know?
All
yeah.
Right.
And so the spiritual thing was moving along, and as I started quickening my energy with meditation, it started expanding the electromagnetic wavelength that I could pick up on. So I could start seeing things that I couldn't see before, which is typical with meditation if you go deep with it.
I've heard that. Yes, yes. All right, stand by if you would. Brett, we have to take a little pause just for
Absolutely.
A couple of minutes, and we'll come right back with George and Frank and Brett. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Brett, courtesy of Frank and George. And we're hearing a really remarkable journey already. Brett, let's go ahead.
Yes, okay. So the meditation, it took about 3 years of meditating before I ended up with what they call, you know, a samadhi type experience, or a experience with Paramatma, which is the descent of source upon you, and that was a profound experience that shifted me. But then sometime after that, life started getting pretty complicated with children, and I got away from my meditations in time. Well, I wasn't doing it as regularly, but after the second child was born, I pretty much was a householder and dealing with just more, you know, worldly
uh-huh.
things. Meditating less, but during the time when I was meditating, I'll just point out, like, I'd go to a movie theater and I could see the embeds that they put in them, and that started popping out.
Oh.
So that was interesting. Yeah, you could see it because it quickens you, and when you're quickened, you can see those things.
That's pretty
Normally
quick.
You can't.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah, so it was
yeah.
interesting. Yes. And then right somewhere in that neighborhood, my brother started having some pretty heavy-duty contact experience, which sort of pulled our attention into that, because there was some fear involved. And there was he had one event where he was filming a craft and was knocked out. And so it kind of jump-started my brother and I on this path of trying to figure out, you know, what's going on and who are these beings and what do they want.
Mm-hmm.
And over a period of about, he was telling me it's about 7 years, he did a lot of filming, he'd never go anywhere without a camera because he was having so many sightings. So he'd film these things, and he'd even be led to them. And so
well, they were tuned in on you two, it sounds like, very clearly.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, when we would get together, we'd have sightings, and like we'd be walking at nighttime. My brother's a bit of a night owl, and we'd go out at nighttime walking, and like one of the ways they'd let us know they were around is they'd start shutting the street lamps off.
Oh yeah.
While we're walking, and then we would look up, and then we'd see them, and that sort of thing. And this, I mean, those types of sightings went on a long time. And eventually, I ended up taking my wife out to Gillian's place out at Mount Adams. And we spent the night there and you know, had sightings there. When we came back from that trip back out to Virginia, I mean, it was full on after that. It was almost like we were flagged or tagged or something. I mean, we were having a lot of sighting activities.
Like a lot, even, like once a month, once every other month?
Oh, no. I mean, it could be like the very day we got back from that trip in Virginia, that night we had a sighting. In fact, we actually had a ship come down over the backyard at tree level. And I don't think it was manned is my feeling, but it was more like a... I don't know, some kind of a robotic ship that just hovered over the trees. And but by that time, Grace, my wife's name at the time, it was Grace, and she got a little freaked out. And I remember calling her out to the back porch to see this thing, and she didn't really want to even come out and look at it. I think she'd had enough.
Mm-hmm.
She was trying to, you know, digest what she'd already been exposed
to. Sure, well,
it's
a sensory overload situation, of course.
Right. And it was more, it was newer to her than it was to me. And, you know, so that was going on. And it really hasn't, I mean, it wanes at times, but it really has never stopped.
Really? So you've been tuned in for decades, is what you're saying.
Well, what my brother and I eventually figured out with this thing, at least for us, is that it had to do with our energy level, like where our energy and our consciousness was. And if we could hold our consciousness higher and not get bogged down with so much mundane stuff, we found that we would have a lot more sightings. And then when we got into difficult times in our life, like another divorce, I went through, and during those times, the energy was just so, like, visceral and difficult, and then there would hardly be any sightings.
So you're under stress, and the sightings essentially abated. They left. They went away while you dealt with your turbulence inside. That kind
it
of a
seemed,
thing.
It seemed to work that way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, because some of it may have to do with, you know, we don't see the world with our eyes, but we see through them. And where our consciousness is and where our frequency is at, I believe, determines what is available to us to see. And the broader, when you widen out with your frequency and you quicken your frequency, things that are normally at the periphery of your perception become more obvious, too. So, and this is one reason why, you know, like the way we eat, you know, when it has to do with your blood, but when your blood gets dirty, it's hard to hold a high frequency.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So, yeah,
look at
so
the average American, look at the average American diet, Brett.
Right.
My God, it's amazing. I'm amazed the body can take as much abuse as it does and people can still function.
It's amazing, actually. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go on to some more sightings. Did you have any kind of, let's say, consistency in the types of objects, machines, inhabited or autonomous or otherwise, that you were seeing?
There was definitely consistency. My brother and I coined the sightings we started having at the same time together. We call them StarCraft. Because the light that they emit is just like what you see from Venus. It doesn't flicker. It's completely, perfectly crystal clear. And of course, the ships would, you know, they'd come and they'd go and they'd move. So unlike Venus, you know, but they'd come down and they could power up and get really bright, and then they could do the fade into and fade right in front of your eyes, just literally disappear. And we were consistently seeing that type of, a sighting.
Uh-huh.
But that wasn't the only thing that was being seen. Sometimes we would go down to Green Lake when I'd come out, you know, I'd fly out and see my brother and my mom out to Seattle, and my brother and I would take walks around Green Lake at nighttime. And I mean, more often than not, we'd have a sighting out there. And
give us an example. What kind of a sighting would it be? What would you say?
Well, it would. You know, they would be very, very dim when they're in a populated place like that,
mm-hmm.
and they would not be. They wouldn't be obvious about it.
Lights in the sky?
Very, very. They would come in lower, but very dimly lit. And the only way you'd even see it is if you were paying attention, which
I
we
see.
Always were.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those sightings were not. They weren't the StarCraft type settings. They were more like you were really looking at the bottom of a ship. And During this period, there was a lot of other weird, anomalous things going on that we were, it was almost like an overload. There were so many things going on. Like my brother, he was having a situation where he could go on his computer. He'd start off with a clean screen. He'd go on the computer. When he'd shut his computer down, there'd be fingerprints all over the screen. Not his.
Missing
and,
time?
No, In fact, he demonstrated it to me when I was out there, and we did the same thing. We sat down in front of the computer, like broad daylight, sat down, went, you know, scout, surfing around, shut the computer down, shut the monitor down, and fingerprints would be all over the screen.
No, but what did they have, when you say fingerprints, I'm getting the idea that they may not have been fingerprints like we're used to seeing. Did they have little tiny fingerprint lines in them? Do you remember seeing that?
Exactly like ours, and really greasy, and but smaller.
Huh.
And very rarely was there any organization to it. They were more like random touching of the screen and then smearing, flicking the screen. But there was one time when I was out there, and this is really interesting because they put an organized, like drawing with their fingers on the screen when him and I shut the monitor down, and it made a vertical line. It wasn't quite vertical. It was maybe 15 degrees off from the vertical. Okay, they made a line of dots with their fingertips somehow, and then at the top of it they put a disc.
No
just
kidding.
Like a, you know. Yeah, well, and I looked at that. I was like, Mark, come on! They never do anything like this. They got to be. This means something. And I remember saying that over and over to him. This means something.
Yeah.
And so Mark went into the kitchen. He's up on the sixth floor, right by Seattle Center. You can see the Seattle Center. I mean, the Space Needle from his window.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're up on, you know, and this is back before they remodeled this building, and you could actually open up the window and lean out the window. You could step out the window if you wanted to. But the window was wide open, and I walked over to the window, and I noticed an object coming straight at the building. Straight at the building, straight at me, basically. And I just stood there looking at this thing getting bigger and bigger and bigger as it's coming straight in.
Not nighttime again, daytime?
No. This is before, like, I mean, noon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what did the object look like? What are we talking about?
It was a V-ship. It was not huge, but it was a V.
Like a V boomerang.
No wings on it at all.
Okay.
No curvature. It was basically like a triangle.
Delta wing.
And it dead silent. No
came
noise.
Right at the house. At what elevation approximately?
Are you top of the building by 100 feet?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Did it pass right on overhead?
Yeah, it passed right. I mean, it went right, and I called for Mark, and Mark, I mean, it was so cool. I leaned out the window, and then I could see it was the angle, just like they drew on the computer screen. As I looked up at the bottom of the ship, you know, I'm looking at the ship just like they drew it. They put the
it was almost like
a message to look up.
Sure, they telegraphed you. They let you know.
It was really, yeah, and that weirdly enough, like seeing a physical object like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was more exciting to me than seeing the starcraft that when they're in light frequency.
Oh, I would think so. Nothing like a daytime stunner like that. That's just you're describing some remarkable things. We have to pause again. Sorry, at the top of the hour. We'll come right back and do hour number two as we continue with Brett and George. A quick comment from you, very quick.
I'd like to hear more about the description of the craft, but
yeah, we'll get to there. We have
exciting.
We'll do that. I got to get this break out of the way, so we'll take our break, come back, and ask Brett to describe the V shape, if there was any markings he could see, seams, anything like that, color, texture, and more. As we continue in just a few minutes on this Friday night.